Welcome to the game.
It's a beautiful thing.
With Mark Duffield.
By golly gosh.
The son of a darkened shearer and a self-described ball-playing jack-of-all-trades.
We shouldn't be surprised, should we?
Who lit up footy fields in the southwest before becoming WA's preeminent AFL scribe.
My goodness.
And Glenn Quarterman.
Wow-wee.
A proud Victorian parked permanently in the west who would have played 300 AFL games if not for his incredibly small hands.
Goodness gracious me.
Together, they are Duff and Quarters.
You know who.
And this is your favourite footy podcast.
It's unbelievable.
Hello, everybody. Thursday. So time for the second edition this week of the Duff and Quarters podcast. The man with the very small hands and the son of a darkened shearer, Glenn.
Just out of the AFL hub, Duff. So I'm having my Panadol Rapid Soluble. A bit of a hangover I have today. Just got out of the hub. So just piled it on way too much up there.
Hard night party.
Oh, very much so. Still 48-hour party, people.
I believe the AFL is starting to wheel out the grand final entertainment.
Yes, we've got the first, actually, and it is National Anthem will be performed by Tim McCallum, who's in a wheelchair. Fantastic voice, you've ever heard him. Was a contestant on The Voice. So that's the first of many we'll hear. I have a theory on the grand final. I don't like international artists. I think it should be all Australian artists.
Yeah, I agree.
It's one of our biggest stages of the year.
Yep.
I'll include the Melbourne Cup with that as well. I think that we should promote our own. I think that Paul Kelly should open it every year, whether it's live or whether it's recorded. I remember. I just think it's a great anthem for footy. Just start the thing going with that, I reckon, every year. I reckon they should – it's Queensland, so if they can – and there'll be difficulties too with COVID – maybe concentrate on Queensland artists. Now, we know Powderfinger have said they can't do it, which is a bit soft. The finger, that's a bit soft. They have performed a live stream recently, so I think they're ready to go. So it's a bit soft, Powderfinger. They should get the Chats. Have you ever heard the Chats?
No.
So they're a Sunshine Coast thrash sort of garage band. Now, they are so good, if you like that sort of stuff. There's three-piece. Iggy Pop heard them and said, my next tour, they're supporting me. And they did. Great. One really good song called Pub Food. Right?
Pub Feed, mate.
Josh knows what I'm talking about. And Mum Stole Me Darts. Great song, great number, great lyrics.
I'd love to hear that played at an AFL grand final. Mum Stole Me Darts.
Oh, Pub Feed would be great.
Trey Rusko's mum, and she'd really get into that. Of course, for those not familiar with Trey Rusko's mum, when Trey kicked his first goal in AFL football, she admitted she didn't see it because she was out the back having a dart.
One of the finds of the season, Trey Rusko's mum. Anyway, that's my thought on the grand final.
They might have to save some money on grand final entertainment quarters because they've been spending a bit on staff.
Oh, so 795 staff members of the AFL before cuts, $115.6 million. That's a fair bit slice of money.
And the members of the executive between them,
10.5 mil. So that's an average of $880,000. Now,
we know Gillen was 1.74, I think, maybe last year.
It was last year. And we don't know exactly because they won't disclose it, which I don't agree with. I think it's a not-for-profit organisation. I think we should be transparent with all wages. And this is where we lead to this confusion and doubt and rumour mongering. Just make it transparent. Let us know what you're earning. Has taken a 50% pay cut. Well done, Gil. But 50% of a lot of money is still a lot of money, Duff.
But hang on, if the average wage of the executive is $800,000 this year,
yes, correct.
And Gillen,
$880, so closer to nine.
So and Gillen's taken a 50% pay cut, and we think the last time his wage was publicised was 1.74 mil. So that's about 850.
Mm-hmm. That's after the pay cut. I'm saying the 880 average wage was before the pay cut.
Yeah, okay.
So, look, I think there's nothing good about COVID apart from the fact that we are now rationalising footy departments have become bloated. AFL has certainly become bloated. You know, good on the downside, some great people lost to footy. I mean, even at Hawthorn, my club, Duff, this week, Damien Carroll and Max Bailey. Max Bailey, the West Perth boy, played in the flag for Hawthorn. Two better people you'll not meet in football, have been great contributors to Hawthorn, unfortunately just can't afford to keep them on. And this is happening at every club. Good people are lost. Now, on the one hand, yes, footy departments have been bloated, but we do need to streamline. And then we have 400 in the hub, Party Central, 6 weeks out from a grand final. For me, it beggars belief.
Yeah, I agree with that. I hope that some of these people that have lost jobs at AFL clubs are repositioned and relocated in other areas of the football system, because to me, one of the problems with recent AFL administrations, I think, is that they've tried to build the whole thing from the top down, and I think good systems are built from the bottom up.
Yep.
And you adjust the top based on the results you get at the bottom. When you build it from the top down, I think you can get some pretty skew-if results at the other end. Now, there is no reason why people who are capable of working in the AFL system shouldn't make great contributions at the second tier or other tiers of footy. And if we resource those tiers of football properly, I think we'll get a much better outcome at the top end.
You know what? And 100% about the building it from the bottom up, Duff. You know who gets angriest? You get these wages. Let's say it's 880K, right, average. There's people who work voluntarily at community football clubs who work, I'm going to say, as hard as a lot of these people do. They work so hard, and their clubs just struggle from year to year, week to week, day to day even sometimes. These clubs, the money's not finding its way to these clubs. I know I'm a part of one, Duff. We very much self-fund ourselves. So, you know, this is where people get angry when you have that top-heavy situation.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that there is what's the saying? The Chinese word for crisis is very similar to the Chinese word for opportunity, and the crisis creates opportunity to reposition people, to realign what we want out of our football system and reallocate resources to get a better result. And that doesn't mean having a bunch of fat cats at the top end, taking a lot of money and employing people for the sake of employing them.
Yep.
What I would say, though, is that there's a few people at the AFL who have well and truly earned their money.
No question. Travis Old's probably one of them this year,
He's been their MVP.
No doubt.
I reckon.
No doubt.
To be able to get a fixture organised with the contingencies that have had to be taken into account.
Incredible effort.
And it will have its quirks. Obviously, Brisbane will need help leaving home for a while, because they have not left home or barely left home. But that's just a quirk of where most of the games are being played.
They could just ask Collingwood what it's like.
That's right.
How do we get to Docklands? Where's that?
But for most other clubs, I think the fixture has been reasonably fair. I think.
I don't really think it really matters, Duff. It's the system, if you look, whichever way you look at it, it's a massively compromised system. There's asterisks everywhere. I don't think it matters. I think the fact we've got a season away is what matters. And there will be asterisks against whoever wins it. But I tell you what, whoever wins it, it'll have worked bloody hard and we'll have deserved that Premiership Cup. So I just think it's good we've got a season away. There'll be a bit of emptiness about it, for sure, because you want to accept the cup in front of a full house, don't you, at the best stadium available, not some – anyway, we won't go down that path. I'm over it. I'm over my tears.
Yabba gabba doo.
Yes.
All right, West Coast injuries quarters. Very long list, and it means we have another Brayshaw playing in the AFL.
The new first family of football. You go back through it. What a great family. Let's talk about the Brayshaws first. It's funny, isn't it? You look back and you've got Mark, you've got James, you've got Sticks, the patriarchal figure of that family. You're born into that family. You're born to play elite-level sport. And you know the old saying, the apple doesn't fall too far from the tree. All quality kids, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. Hamish Brayshaw, I think, of all the young people at West Coast, is regarded as one of the absolute best people. I remember Russell Gibbs, the chairman, talking about him and just spoke about, you know, what a great young man he was. And he's probably, you know what? He's probably the best story of all of them because obviously Angus was picked three in a draft, so top end of the draft, finished third in a Brownlow medal. Andy has had a great season, will probably finish top five in Fremantle's best and fairest, certainly justified his status as a number two draft pick.
Jeez, I would have said it would be an absolute certainty to be top five, maybe top three.
Hamish, it looked like his opportunity had passed him by. Mm. And, of course, we remember the great scenes from the draft a couple of years back when Andrew had been taken pick two and then late in the draft, West Coast have read Hamish's name out and the mum, Mrs. Brayshaw, got very emotional, shed a few tears of joy and a great hug with Mark. And, yeah, it was just a fantastic thing. And for him to get a game, and they have had a lot of injuries, so they're going deep into their stocks now. But he'll play pretty solidly. He's that kind of guy, you know. He's not going to be a star, but he's a big body, very diligent player. He wouldn't be letting them down.
Yeah, equipped mentally and physically, I would suggest, not to be too overawed by the situation. Of course, there's going to be an element of that. It's your first game at AFL level, but so we shouldn't expect too much. But, you know, he is well equipped.
Who's your first family?
At the moment, family? It's the Brayshaws, and they may well be the first family at the end of their careers. Look, you've got the Ablets, the Danahers. Jesus, the Selwoods have been good, haven't they? You look back at the Ablets, you know, people always, obviously Gary, the pick of them, but you got Jeff and Kevin, premiership. Now, Jeff was a dual premiership player at Hawthorn. Kevin, I think, played in one, certainly played in grand finals. Great footy family, very different players. The Danahers, Terry Danaher, one of the best footballers I've seen pound for pound, just in terms of ability and just courage.
Yeah, and could play anywhere.
Oh, back forward, yeah, and just hard as nails. All the Danahers were really, you know, Anthony, terrific career. Chris, a terrific career. Neil, probably the best of them, according to Kevin Sheedy. Had that horrible run of knee injuries. What a great family. And we all remember the day that the four of them were all played for Essendon. So I think if you look at them, you know, who's the best of the lot? Well, you're probably going to pick, you know, Gary Ablett Senior and Junior, I guess, but in terms of the total playing ability of the group, I'm going to go the Danahers.
Yeah, it's hard to go past the Ablets. So Jeff was a gun player for Hawthorn, played on a wing, played in flags.
Racehorse was his nickname.
Yeah, he was quick. Well, they're all quick.
Used to win the grand final sprint every year, if not every second year. Yeah, Gary.
Yes, he did. And of course, Gary. Are in the conversation for the greatest players of all time. So
it probably is hard to nudge them out. I might be a bit excited about the Danahers, but geez, they're a good family.
Of course, you had the Lords.
Yes.
Alistair and Stuart Lord.
Who famously, they were twins. Yes. And Alistair won a Brownlow medal. Or was it Stuart? Now, Alistair won a Brownlow medal in the 60s and punched, was reported for punching an opponent late in the season, but the brother stepped forward and said, no, it was me. And they accepted that, got the punishment. Alistair went in to win the Brownlow.
Didn't they wear numbers back in those days?
No, well, I think it was more of a congested situation and they were both around the ball. Yeah. And so he just said it was me and got away with it.
Let's not forget the Riolis.
Oh, yeah. You throw that one into the equation.
So,
wow.
You know, the Riolis for pound talent are probably the one family that challenges the Ablets.
Yeah. Excitement levels. Jeez, it's a good competition, isn't it? Ablets did a bit for the game.
Imagine if you had like just, you know, the Ablets go up to Darwin and they play up a Christmas footy match. You know, if they were all sort of like same age, imagine that. Ablets versus Riolis.
Well, you throw the Riolis in, you're throwing the Longs in as well.
Yes.
Same family.
Extended family, oh, yes.
That's a pretty good footy game. I'll watch it. Yes, please.
And, of course, in WA, Polly Farmer had two sons, Brett and Dean, who both played
league
footy.
Brett kicked 90 for Claremont in a premiership year.
Brett was part of what they called the Golden Triangle, which is what they now refer to the whole Western Suburbs as. But the Golden Triangle at Claremont in the halcyon days of the very early 1980s was a full forward line of Brett Farmer, Warren Ralph and Steve Malaxis. Steve Malaxis was playing in a forward pocket in those days, and they kicked a lot of goals. They had the Crackers kicking the ball to them. That helped.
That would. Good player, Brett.
Very good player. Left footer, could take a big mark. Very clever player. All right, moving along. So West Coast injuries, fatal blow to their premiership chances, or are they just trying to get themselves?
Worried. I am worried for them at the moment. I know you've got a little.
I've got a theory. Yeah.
You have got a theory, which is fine.
You go with yours.
I do think it impacts on them, and I am worried about their premiership chances this year. As a result, it's too close to the finals for me, so it is concerning. Elliot Yeo, I've always felt was the most important player. Maybe not the best, but the most important player in their mix. He's coming back for the finals, if not the week, maybe next week. I hope he's right. I really do, because OP, as we know, it's not a short-term fix. So, I'm really concerned. Interestingly, with the Eagles, it could go two ways, and we'll know Geelong, Richmond will play a big part in this. So in the past, top four has been so important. Maybe it's not so important this year. Yes, if you don't finish top four, it's sudden death. But they can play. If they finish fourth, so they win their last two, Richmond loses Geelong, they finish fourth, there's every likelihood they'll play Port Adelaide in Adelaide, first final, which is not a bad result given they have a great record there and Port Adelaide's never beaten them there. If they finish fifth, they either get a home final or they can choose their venue, which I would have no doubt would be Adelaide. So it's looking okay either way. So all is not lost if they don't get up tonight against St Kilda, but I am concerned.
Yeah, well, I think you've got to be concerned. You'd rather be fit and available than unfit and unavailable this time. But I do feel a little while back we talked about Collingwood when Collingwood was basically going through the same thing and they had, their compressed section of the fixture. They were having to get up very quickly for games. They were losing players to injury. And we talked about just get yourself there in one piece. And I think that's what West Coast is going to try and do now. Like, there were players that finished the game the other night who've been pulled out of this game. Now, maybe they are injured or maybe they're just sore. But to me, West Coast looks to me like a team that's gathering itself.
So this is the end of the compressed fixtures for them. So they get a week. So they're not playing until next Thursday.
Yep.
And thereafter, there'll be some time, but there'll be a bye and then there'll be.
Yep.
So this is the end of the compressed. They played five games in 19 days. I get your point. The only thing I'll add to that is Collingwood's compressed period was earlier. This is very close to the finals.
But look,
the bye will certainly help.
It will. I just think that I reckon they're going to try and do something similar to what the Doggies did in 2016. Now, there's no guarantee they can pull it off and go deep into September, but I think they'll be less concerned about whether they finished fourth or fifth than they will be about getting a fit team on deck for week one of finals, whatever final they are playing.
Yeah, and I would add to that, you'll be less concerned about finishing fourth or fifth this year than you will be in years to come, because I think it'll be much more important going forward when you will get that home ground advantage, whereas this year I think it's not so important. If you're going to do it, you're going to do it this year. You're going to do it Doggies, you're going to do it this year.
So if you finish five, if you're West Coast, it looks likely they come home and play a final at home. That's the first week of finals.
Or if they don't, if that can't be done, I can't see why it can't be done, but if it can't, they'll get the choice of venue.
Yeah, so I think they'll come home. I think they'll get the home final the first week. I think they'll come home and they'll hopefully do the job on whoever they play against, and then they will say, okay, we are three games from a flag.
And I don't want to harp on about it, Duff, but it'll be the best of the finals in terms of the spectacle.
The one here.
It'll be the best of the finals. People will exit whatever happens this year and there'll be a premier, there'll be a runners-up, there'll be happiness, there'll be misery, but they'll be saying the best final was the one played in Perth.
Mark McGowan will probably open it up to 60,000 just to go na-na-na-na-na.
Yeah. He might cut a ribbon or something out the front,
yeah,
perhaps.
Right.
He might. having said that, before we go on, we should recognise some impending retirement stuff.
Yeah, so Matty Cruiser. Now, he's an interesting one, Quarters. Matty Cruiser, I reckon, was a hell of a player, and his body just never allowed him to have the career that he might have had.
Pick one, 2007, and just, what, 2-3 knees. Was it 2017 he had a super year? It was a real late, when we thought it had gone past him, it reminded us just what a sublime talent he was. He's still got 189 games out of himself, Duff. And
yeah,
it's been a remarkably good career given what he has endured. I think it's a shame because he could have been one of the great ruckmen of all time. But we'll never really know, will we?
Very influential player. So when Carlton's best footy, and obviously they've spent a long time out of contention, but Carlton's best footy in recent times has generally coincided with Matt Cruiser being fit, available, and really having a strong influence on games. And he's one of those ruckmen who could have a strong influence on games, wouldn't it? We often talk about ruckmen as, you know, what is their true value? But I think Matt Cruiser is one of those ones who, when he was up and about, they tended to get up and about. So he actually had a period, he had two periods in his career where he was probably pretty sound. So 2012 and 2013, and of course Carlton were around the mark in those years. They played in 2013 after the Bombers got chucked out, played finals.
Won the final, didn't
they? And also in 2016 and 2017, he played 21 games in each of those seasons. So he could string a season together, but he had years where, so 2014 only played the one match, 2015 played 13 games, 2018 played 12 games.
All Australian, any of those?
No, I don't
Pity.
Ever recall him being
all Australian. He was good. It was certainly good enough to be. So that's it? He said that's it, retirement? No one with a window who's in need of a ruckman could pick him up for a year or two?
Well, GWS could do worse.
Yep.
Mind you, he's only played one game this year, which doesn't augur well for him.
It doesn't. I must say, look, Pitanay's a very good second ruckman, I reckon, and I like the look of De Koning.
Yeah, I agree. Now, the other retirement?
Bryce Gibbs.
Now, we talked about injury preventing a player like Cruiser from getting the absolute best out of his career. Bryce Gibbs, did Bryce Gibbs ever get the best out of himself?
No. Now, were there some off-field issues that prohibited him from doing that?
Yeah, there were, yeah.
Perhaps he could have still played through that producer. But for me, he looks like he can tell us that. Maybe he did. He might retire and say, I got the absolute best out of myself. As an onlooker, I don't think we ever saw the best. We ever saw what Bryce Gibbs could really produce.
So 267 games. It's a pretty fair career. He polled 15 Brownlow votes in 2009. That's a pretty strong year. He polled 12 Brownlow votes in 2011. Again, pretty strong year. Mm-hmm. 13 and 11 in his last 2 years at Carlton, which was 2016 and 2017. The shift to Adelaide was interesting.
It was an abject failure. The shift to Adelaide,
yeah, strange.
Didn't work. And it's an odd thing because he's an Adelaide boy, and the talk early was that he wanted to play with Adelaide. Carlton got him, so it was strange how he finally ended there, but it just didn't work out for him.
So was Gibbs to Adelaide? Was that the classic case of a club they've just lost a grand final, and they think we're one player away? And they go and get Bryce Gibbs. Obviously, they tried to get him the year before.
Yeah, look, I think it probably was. I think they had some other issues, though, post that grand final that went way beyond Bryce Gibbs.
Yeah, well done to the Crows, incidentally. The last two games.
I'll put my hand up. I said they wouldn't win a game. Beat my boys. Good win over GWS. They have improved. They're no longer the worst team in it.
I think North
is at the moment. Showed signs last week, but I think North – probably just ahead of my boys, the Hawks, and then I reckon, them.
I reckon North's a big chance this weekend. We'll get to that later when we do some tips. Let's get on with some tipping, starting with St Kilda.
Okay, St Kilda West Coast tonight. Strangely, Gabba 5:10 PM. So strangely, given our tipping panel in the paper would normally be West Coast, West Coast, West Coast. But for rightly so, they've been in good form. Won 10 of their last 11 against the Saints as well. And but for me, I sniff a bit of backs to the wall here, and I know I tip the Eagles. Everyone's telling me, "What are you doing, St Kilda? There's no one, half the team's out." I just have enough faith in the players that are left. It's still pretty decent. Nick Nat, Kelly, Gaff, Waterman on a wing. It's still a pretty decent, I think, midfield to take on St Kilda, who I think have struggled the last few weeks. So I know I'm going to regret this stuff, but I'm going to pick the Eagles. Obviously, there's some. I'm not totally convinced, but I just see enough there, and the system. You back the Eagles system over St Kilda's system at the moment.
So what I'm looking at in this game is that I think this could easily go either of two ways. It could – the changes that West Coast have had to make, it could disrupt and unsettle them to the point where they just can't function normally and therefore St Kilda win comfortably. The other thing that it might bring is that – different players bring different things, and St Kilda won't be able to predict and plan for what they bring, and that would put West Coast in the game up to their eyeballs. And let's not forget, they've still got Kennedy and Darling, they've still got McGovern and Barras.
Yep.
So they've got great bone structure.
Yep, 100% they do.
And those things can carry you a long way in footy. All you need is a bit of supply, and if they get that, then, well, they'll be in this up to their eyeballs.
On the other hand, it is still the Gabba and it is still a night game.
So 50-50 game for me, but I've gone with the Saints. I think I just look at West Coast and I think West Coast has got their mind on things a couple of weeks further down the track.
Yep, yep. Well, we'll see what happens there. It's going to be an almighty – look, it'll be a great game tonight. I think tomorrow night's the pick of them. Metricon Stadium, Geelong v Richmond, 5:50 p.m. Or will it be, Duff? I mean, everyone's saying it's the season-defining game. We're going to have an outright – I think we will have an outright premiership favourite after whoever wins this. I think – and for me, everything's pointing to Geelong. Geelong's won their past six. Richmond, by the way, won their past eight at Metricon, so they like it there. Geelong's form, you'd probably – if you're just looking at form, the way they've been playing, who they've been playing, you'd probably pick Geelong. But Richmond – And on the other hand, Richmond have had a horrible 2 weeks. Horrible 2 weeks off the field. But I think it'll galvanise them a little. And they are building into something. I think they're going to get Lambert and Grimes back this week too. So massive ins for mine. Nothing wrong with their bone structure. And I'm going to pick the Tigers, but bit of caveat emptor about it.
Yeah, I'm going to pick the Tigers. And interesting, looking at our tipping panel, you and I are about the only ones in the tipping panel that picked Richmond. To me, it's not a season-defining game. And okay. I don't even know what a season-defining game
is. Well, I think this close to the finals, I think we're all saying Geelong's coming at Richmond. That's what we're seeing. I want to see them play Richmond because they are really coming. I think this is a different Geelong side to the one we saw going to the finals last year, where you just knew when the heat was on they just weren't going to be quite good enough. I think they're quite good enough now.
I reckon that this game means more to Richmond because Richmond has Geelong has a high percentage.
Yes.
So Geelong
– they can still finish top two.
Geelong is reasonably comfortable – inside, but top two means nothing to Geelong. Yeah. They're playing where they're playing.
Yeah,
true. No matter what.
Yeah, that's true.
So the top two means bugger all to Geelong, really. But Richmond, top four is on the line here. So I think it means more to the Tigers, and that's the main reason I'm going to tip them. I think Geelong is going slightly better, and I think Geelong's style now will hold up well against the good teams in the comp. They very nearly beat West Coast in Perth, and that's no mean feat when you very nearly beat West Coast in Perth. I think they'll hold up well against the Tigers, but I just think the Tigers will have everything to play for tonight, and I think that may get them over the
line. Yeah, the intrigue for me is going to be it'll be an arm wrestle in the first half. You get to that 2/3 of the way through the third quarter, and then Richmond just turns the notch up, and what's Geelong's response going to be? That's what I'm intrigued about. So I could almost go away and just come back in halfway through the third. But I won't do that, of course. But
sorry, I said tonight. It's tomorrow night.
Yeah, tomorrow night. So we're both on the Tigers?
We're both on the Tigers.
Interesting. We'll see what happens. Saturday, Metricon, 12:10 p.m, North Melbourne v Freo. Now, Duff, you're concerned about the trip for Freo.
So Fremantle players will be getting up at 5 o'clock on Saturday morning. They'll be catching a bus to Cairns Airport. They'll be catching a flight to Brisbane, I believe, which is, I think it's a two and a half hour flight. Then they catch another bus to the Gold Coast to play this game. Now, they'll get there in plenty of time, but we saw a similar thing happen in reverse with Melbourne for their match against Sydney, and Fremantle were on the same flight of them. They had some hiccups on the trip, so I think there was a delay on the bus. The plane flight took a bit longer than they expected. They had to rush a bit to get
everywhere where they needed to get before going to the ground and getting ready to play. I just worry about this. Now, I've tipped Fremantle, but I was tempted to tip North Melbourne in this game. I think I know what you're saying about North Melbourne. You think they're the worst team in it right now.
Yep.
But I think they bottomed out a couple of weeks ago when they played Gold Coast, and they were just appalling. And I think they'll be a little bit better than that. And I just want to see if Fremantle has five or six players that don't handle the travel regime that they're going to have to put up with, they can't win. Because the gaps aren't that big.
Yeah, I understand that. I think they're playing well enough at the moment, though, to overcome these things. I really do. And it's a young group, and it's more of an excitement than a burden for them at the moment. So I reckon they can get over it. North Melbourne, by the way, great to see LDU back and playing some decent footy. Anderson's had a good year. The defence at North's got a bit of a good look about it too. Tarrant, who'll probably get Tabana. Whoever gets Tarrant, good luck with that.
Yeah, you're in for a
good luck with that. Ben Mackay, look, for me, has stood out the last few weeks. He looks like a really solid type in defence. Luke McDonald's a good player. So, and Larky and Zerha in that forward line starting to buzz around a bit too. So then it's not going to be a walkover, but I just think Fremantle at the moment, I like the way they're coached. I like the way they're going about it. I like the way the kids are going in the middle. I think it'll be a day game at Metricon. So hopefully the conditions are good, because I like to see that Freo forward line after the awful conditions they played in the other night. I want to see how they're going to go. Whoever's not on Tarrant, you still have your work cut out for you, but I think that the opportunity is there for a Lobb or a Hogan to kick a couple in this game. Bit of a tip for Freo too. When you get to Cairns Airport, when you get to the Qantas Club Lounge, just be very careful in there. I have been in the Qantas Club at Cairns and it didn't end well. There was 12 of us. We're going to Kokoda, and I reckon we've drunk it out. I reckon we've drunk it dry within about half an hour. And I said to them, "What did you expect? 12 blokes about to walk the Kokoda track. We're a bit thirsty. It wasn't going to last long."
There's nothing like starting the Kokoda trail with a hangover.
They had to outsource, and we're only there about 30 minutes.
All right, we're both on the Dockers.
We are. Saturday, Port Adelaide v Essendon, Adelaide Oval, 3:05. PM. Look, Essendon, we all talk about how bad they were last week, and they weren't great, but their second half was better than their first half, and that's after all their carry-on at halftime. What did you think about the halftime joking and carrying on, Duff, when they were like 12 goals?
Look, I know it's the optics. It's not a great look, but you know what? I'd rather see that at that stage and then they go out and get Dinkum than what I saw from Richmond against Fremantle, where they're basically giggling during play.
Yeah.
That, to me, that wasn't a good look. And I know it rankled Fremantle.
I agree with you. John Worsfold had an interesting take on it. He thought that if they're gonna carry on like that before a game and then they play like they did in the second half, then please do it every week.
Yeah.
I don't think it really matters. It's a short window. I agree. I think if it's in the game and your opponent's kicked three goals and you're laughing and joking with him, that doesn't sit well with me. But if it's just a halftime situation, you're about to go and play again, you're having just trying to lighten it up a bit for a few seconds, I don't see too much wrong with that. Having said that, I think they'll get smashed by Port Adelaide.
Yeah, I agree.
Boak, who's going to be one or two in the Brownlow, Lockie Neal probably got another three last night, actually. So Neal's going to be hard to peg back. But Boak, if anyone's going to do it, it's Boak. Wine's playing well. Byrne Jones in All-Australian form. Gray playing well again. Charlie Dixon, to me, he's going to be hard to stop. So very compelling case for Port Adelaide. I'm going to pick him.
Yeah, I can't make a case for Essendon, so I'll be picking Port.
GWS v Melbourne, Gabba, 5:40 p.m. Who do you pick here, Duff? How would you know who's going to turn up for either team?
Yeah. Leon,
and also, we spoke last week. We did say if GWS lose this game to Adelaide, will we look back and say that was a bad timing for the appointment for Leon Cameron? I think it was. I don't see the reason for appointing him before that game. Of course, it was because they'd had a win. They were waiting for a win. But
so my understanding is that they agreed with Leon in principle over coaching on some time ago. Mm-hmm. And these things, legally, these things get potentially binding. If you've basically verbally agreed – and it can be shown that you verbally agreed. And it became sort of public knowledge that they'd verbally agreed that he should coach on. Mm-hmm. It's pretty hard for them not to. So I think they were waiting for positivity. But, yeah, we just saw all the old things that we talk about when GWS don't play well came back to haunt them against the Crows the other night, didn't they?
Well, unless there's some secret switch they can just flick, and we all know that you just can't do that, and not in this competition. They're not winning any flags this year. I mean, they're going to be lucky to make the eight. The destiny is in their hands. I'm going to pick them to win this, but you know, even with Melbourne, Melbourne's got one more day of recovery. But I'm less enthusiastic about Melbourne than I am against GWS, if that makes any sense. So I'm going with the Giants, but gee, I'm not confident.
No, you know what they should do? They should swap coaches and see if it makes any difference.
Yeah,
Goodwin at Melbourne. I think
Cameron's done a better job than Goodwin. That, you know, if they make,
well, Cameron's been to finals and won finals.
Well, Cameron, if they make finals this year, that's six final series in a row.
Yeah, and they're the only grand final
last year.
They're the only team that's won a final in each of the last four seasons. So 16, 17, 18, 19. So it'll be five final series in a row.
The frustration is that has he got the best out of the group? Clearly not. Clearly not. Are we overrating this group? Possibly.
Well, that's the thing. They've had a lot of players leave, haven't they? Maybe they just don't run as deep.
They don't run as deep.
As we think they do.
And maybe the departures have created instability in that with that depth. That's the truth too as well. And maybe there's players they would like to have rested that they couldn't, who are playing a bit sore. It all, every little bit counts. So maybe there's a bit of that about it. But I still say the old GWS, when they take the game on, they're as good as any team in the comp. Got them to a grand final last year. When they go conservative, go the narrow side, go into their shells, it's just horrible to watch. And that's how they lose games like they did to Adelaide last week. 10-2 clearances in the first quarter, 3-1. You know, you could tell quarter time, it's just game over.
So we're tipping GWS and we don't trust either of them.
No, that's all we should have said, Duff. Sunday, Metricon, 11:05 a.m, Carlton v Adelaide. So are we going to see Adelaide win three in a row? No, we're not. Carlton, for me, you know what? You concede the first 7 goals in a game against a side like Sydney, and you know what you get with a side like Sydney. Sydney gets 7 goals up, you're not clawing them back. So for me, that, as bad as it looked early, for me, that was a great win by Carlton. Great win. Will do a lot for their confidence going forward. They'll win this game.
Yeah, I think they'll win. Well done to Adelaide, as we said earlier on. The way they've turned it around in the last two games, great kudos to Matthew Nix to keep you cool, to keep playing kids, to stay with the brand and believe that it will take root eventually. So I give them a massive bouquet.
Has there ever been a tougher first year of coaching at AFL level than what Matthew Nix has experienced this year?
Well, he's dealing with the hangover from the camp. He's dealing with key player exodus. He's dealing with a squad where a lot of the good players have gotten old. He had Rory Sloane get injured. He's trying to manage Tex Walker towards the end of his career. He's trying to get Tom Doday, their best interceptor, back from a knee.
He's got the Adelaide executive to deal with.
And the other thing is that, you know, do they have speed? You know, is their style broken? All of those things. And you're doing it in a season where you can't train properly. You're trying to implement a new game plan. The forward line we all used to talk about, quarters, you know, the Tex Walker, Tommy Lynch, Eddie Betts, Charlie Cameron, Josh Jenkins.
Good forward line, yeah.
Mitch McGovern. There's only Tex left.
Yeah.
And Tommy Lynch, who gets used further up the ground. Yeah. So that great forward line that took them to a grand final, there's nothing left of it. Mm. So he's done an amazing job. I give him great credit for what he's done. You know, sometimes your position on the ladder will not reflect how well you have coached.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, we've got our new coach of the year. Make him coach of the year.
No, I don't think so.
Might be a step too far, that one. But nevertheless, I think Carlton. We're both going Carlton. Hawthorn v Western Bulldogs, Adelaide Oval, 1:35 p.m. I get the feeling, Duff.
Can you make a case for your boys?
No, I can't. You know, I'm still clinging on, fingernails deep into the bumper bar.
On the bandwagon.
The rear bumper of the Dogs bandwagon. I still think they can I think they will make finals, and I think they can cause some damage in the finals. So I'm on the Dogs. I think they'll win this. Too many players in pretty good form not to. I think Hawthorn. Season can't end soon enough for Hawthorn right now. I think a lot of injuries, a lot of kids being blooded, which is good. Clarko managing to, for the most part, finished with competitive losses, which for most Hawthorn supporters will tell you that we want early draft picks. And whether you call it management, in-season management or whatever you want to – tanking, whatever you want to call it, the fact is that Hawthorn will get some early draft picks and competitive losses is what you're after at this time of year. So I think that's what it will be this week.
I have to say the Doggies got a lot of credit for beating West Coast. To me, they should have beaten West Coast with West Coast out and with West Coast shorter break between – it was a five-day break versus a nine-day break. The Dogs with everything to play for, trying to stay in the race for the top eight. I think the Dogs will play finals, but I think the Dogs have to play a lot better than they're showing at the moment and than what they showed against West Coast to have any impact on finals whatsoever.
So you think there's too many passengers at the Dogs?
I think –
you've said that to me.
What are they kicking to? They're kicking to Aaron Norton, who takes a couple of marks every game and then is likely to miss the shot. I agree he's great potential, but right now he is the unfinished product. Josh Bruce, well, Josh Bruce is either there when or he's not, and when he's not, he's just missing completely, drops marks.
Plays, yeah, Luke, he tends to play one or two really good games a year just to remind you what you're missing, yeah. And he goes missing. That's the fact with Josh Bruce. Always
like,
has been.
He's like, you know how you get older, you go to nightclubs to remind yourself why you don't go to nightclubs?
Oh, yes, I do. Oh, yes. I never liked them when I was 18, Duff.
Josh Bruce is a bit like that.
No, I didn't like them, Josh. I did not like them when I was 18. I prefer a bar. I prefer a band, live band or just a chat.
Yeah, know. Me too.
Doof. No, thanks.
Used to be a great pub, big pub. You know how we used to have the big pub venues in Perth? Yep. You had the Overflow at the Nookinburra Hotel,
yes,
which is now Botanica. You had the Morley Park, which was called the Generator, and it was huge. And the Angels used to come there and play, and the Divinals
used
to come
there and play. That would have been loud, the Angels.
They used to have these high tables, and you would buy a jug, and the jug would go in the middle of the table, and you'd all stand around with your glasses, and you'd drink, and you'd do a bit of headbanging to the Angels and the Divinals.
So I was in Melbourne. I grew up in Melbourne, and we had so many great venues, music venues too. So for me, the beer garden, that's the ultimate experience, the beer garden. I love it. There's not enough of them anymore.
All right.
Anyway, we digress.
No, you're right. We're finished with Josh
Bruce.
Unless we talk about Josh Bruce.
No, we have gone off on a tangent.
Dogs.
Yeah, Dogs. Okay, Sydney v Brisbane at Kazali Stadium. We saw phase one of no Harris Andrews for the time being last night. Jack Payne did a pretty good job. Second game looked okay. Brisbane looked pretty good last night, albeit for one or two moments. I'm talking Cam Rayner, three goals, so good effort, Cam, but one that he'd probably pay to forget, Duff.
I'm tipping that Cam Rayner had a chat with Chris Fagan after the game. And I'm tipping that Chris Fagan would have opened that chat and the first word that Chris Fagan would have used would have started with the letter F.
I'm tipping that he didn't need to have a chat because he heard everything he said on the sideline at the time. And I'm tipping there were people in Cape York Peninsula who heard Chris Fagan when we're talking about the goal, takes the mark directly in front, just wheels around, has a snap, misses, just should have gone back and taken his kick.
I know that this is a different generation. You know, the millennials, as they're called, are different to what we were. But seriously, there's a final series coming up. There's a flag on the line. Brisbane can win it. And Cam Rayner needs to get fair dinkum. Their kicking for goal has been a problem. He needs to go back. That's a shot you kick.
Yes.
And you need to practice good habits.
They work hard to get you in that position. He needs to – that's his job is to kick those, so he needs to kick them. Sydney have only lost once to Brisbane since 2010. I just thought I'd throw that stat in. The last couple of years Brisbane have been okay too, so but I think I picked Brisbane in this game.
Yeah, interesting. Brisbane is currently waiting on scans for Jared Berry.
Yeah, good player.
That's a I thought Jared Berry not – the other night, but in the game Brisbane played before this, I think it was against Collingwood.
Yep.
I thought Jared Berry was magnificent.
He's had a good year, Jared Berry.
Yeah, he's a very
good
player.
What surprised me about Jared Berry when I saw the AFL under 22 squad selected, did not realise he was still under 22.
Yeah, he's been around for two or three years.
He has, and he's a good, really good pickup for them. And you look at their depth, you look at their midfield depth, and you, wow, everyone would love to have Jared Berry on their list.
So this was a shoulder that popped. It could be a 2 to 3 weeker, or it could be the season. So if that's the season and you put that on top of Harris Andrews, that would be a massive dagger through Brisbane's premiership hopes.
Yeah, but you win flags with squads, mate, not teams. So if they should be good enough. If they're good enough, they'll win without him.
Brisbane for both of us.
Final game of, well, that we need to talk about until next Tuesday would be Collingwood v Gold Coast on Monday at the Gabba, 5:10 p.m. I think Collingwood has to win this. I think Collingwood will win this. Gold Coast will give them some yelp, as they have. Well, they certainly did last week, but I think Collingwood should be good enough. Degoey in the mix here, Duff, so we'd like to see Degoey back. I think with Degoey back in that side, we're a bit more confident with Collingwood going forward, aren't we?
Yeah, well, he's a key, isn't he? Their problem is kicking goals and connecting their midfield to their forward line. Defensively, they're sound, and their midfield runs deep. But Degoey gives them some X factor. Brody Mychek is a really good, hard-working player. Mason Cox brings some unique traits. He's not that consistent yet. They have others floating around. Stevenson gives them some speed. Elliott gives them a little bit of talent and a bit of polish. And obviously Hoskin Elliott is in that mix as well. But Degoey is your V8, Dustin Martin.
He's your Dusty Martin.
Paddy Dangerfield.
Yeah, he is.
He's the guy that can go forward, kick three, change the course of a match. So I think if he plays, that would be a massive in for them, and that would turn them into a very, very dangerous team come finals time.
I think the way they're building, I think they're going to be the team at the bottom end of the eight, and I think they get there, Collingwood. They're going to be that team you don't want to play.
Yeah, so they have to win this. To make sure of their spot in the eight. I think they win it. Gold Coast looked tired to me against Brisbane last night. They looked like a young team starting to look for the end of the
season. Went all right in patches. I think they've been – I think it's a tick. I think it's – if you look at their evolution as a team, what they're trying to build into with the young talent they've got, I think this season's been a tick. Probably could have won a few more, but I think Stuart Jew would be reasonably happy with what they've produced, and I think they can look forward to better things.
And, you know, we talked about a Brisbane player in that Q clash, Lair Rising. Yep. Isaac Rankin, get back to basics.
Yeah, look, I think we're all looking forward to seeing what he's going to give us for the next 10 years plus. But, yeah, look, at the moment there's too much carry on for a career that really hasn't got out of the starting blocks yet. So let's just get some miles on the road. Before we start carrying on with all that, then you can do all your funny stuff.
Yeah, no, he needs to work on the basics. I think David King summed it up last night on the call, do the basics well, son.
Yes.
And he's gotten away from that, and he's having very little impact on games now, and he's mucking up some pretty good scoring opportunities as well.
That's his one wood. We know that.
Yes.
I was just doing my best David King there.
All right. It's time for everybody's favourite segment.
Hello, Newman.
Josh's mailbag.
Mail. When you control the mail, you control information.
Josh's mailbag.
Hello, guys. Another bump around for the mailbag starting in the Alice Springs, the Red Centre.
Oh, lovely place. Love the Alice.
From the son of a Dandaragan shearer.
Dandaragan.
Now living in the Red Centre of Australia, to another shearer's son. And obviously a man with small hands. The world we live in now is about equal opportunity. Seems so far removed with the Victorian dictatorship of the AFL. The rights of the location, the GF, for the next 30 years and the ongoing fixturing, et cetera, is so biased, it's hard to accept, especially in this day and age. My question to the boys, is it beyond all realms of possibility that a Twiggy Forest-led consortium, for example, could form a breakaway competition with all interested clubs, states, that would participate in an equal competition with equal opportunity shared? He has worked for the World Series of Cricket with Kerry Packer, the architect, and recently a lesser extent with the Western Force. What are your thoughts?
It's an interesting call. I wondered about this. I wondered about this a couple of years ago as to whether something like this could happen. It would have to be driven by someone with media interests, I think. Obviously, Packer took over cricket and for the sole purposes of basically getting the media rights.
But what did he – the one asset he had in his favour was the players were disgruntled, they weren't getting paid enough.
Yeah.
I don't think that's the case here.
Plus, every young player grows up with the dream of playing in the grand final at the MCG. And, Quarters, you and I have discussed this before. I don't have a real problem with the grand final being at the MCG until 2058. Just make them bloody well pay for it.
Yes.
And make them pay a market price. If the grand final is worth $100 million to the Victorian economy every year, then make them at least pay $60 or $70 million per year to football for the grand final and make sure that that money, that $60 or $70 million, gets spread to the other states as well as Victoria so that they get some benefit out of the fact that Victoria owns the grand final.
I have no issue with that. You know my thoughts on the grand final should be at the best available stadium that can house the most, which is why I believe it should be the MCG until something else comes up. But I agree with that. I think the distribution, yeah, I think they absolutely should be paid for the right to have it. Thanks for the email and give my regards to that beautiful Alice Springs and the Western and Eastern McDonnell Ranges. Beautiful place.
Michael from the Red Centre, thank you very much for that email. Let's shift now a bit closer to home. Let's go to Trevor. Trevor wants a question about Hamish Brayshaw. He's basically saying he's been surprised by the reaction from Eagles fans about a player that really hasn't done too much at any level. What can we expect from him? We've spoke to him a little bit earlier, but do we expect really huge things from a guy like Hamish Brayshaw?
He's not a star. Let's just say that at the he's a big body. He's got exemplary character. He'll be solid. That's what he'll be. If Adam Simpson gives Hamish Brayshaw a role in this game, he will get absolutely everything out of Hamish Brayshaw to play that role. That's how I would describe him. He's probably – like Andrew has great character, and when you see Andrew run around, you know, Andrew sticks a tackle, they don't get out of the tackle, that sort of thing. Hamish is probably a less athletic version of Andy is the way I'd describe him. He lacks a bit of polish, but he won't let him down tonight.
And don't expect too much. We said this earlier. It's his first game. It's hard going out there in your first AFL game. It's really hard. But, yeah, as Duff said, I think they'll get 100% out of him.
And, like, West Coast people and all footy people, you know, Fremantle people because they have a stake in the Brayshaw family. Melbourne people, they have a stake in the Brayshaw family. North Melbourne, where Mark's been a board member and where James has been a chairman. Claremont people, of course, where Mark and James and Ian played.
People at the Wacker.
All those people have a stake in the Brayshaw story. Stitch and Brayshaw. It is a great story.
Thank you very much, Trevor. Heading to Lydia in Dianella now. The GWS Giants lost to Adelaide. Wow. And seem to have lost much of their form from 2019. Can any of this be put, any of this blame for this team's form be put on Steve Canelio's appointment as the captain?
Gee, I wouldn't have thought so.
That's a good question.
Is it?
Well, Stephen Canelio hasn't had a good season. Sometimes in a bloke's first season, when they step up, I know I helped Matthew Pavlich write his book, and he talked about the worries of being captain in 2007 when he took over from Peter Bell and how it took a toll on him. And he was basically – he was still learning to handle the whole leadership thing. They had some difficulties. Chris Tarrant went off the reservation in Darwin and they had to handle it. I think there was a punch-up in the street. I think Mark Harvey got king hit by somebody in the street as they were walking back from a nightclub as a group. And Pav – said it was very, very difficult. I get the feeling Canelio has laboured with the responsibility. It's affected his footy, and Stephen Canelio is a very pivotal member of that midfield.
Yeah, look, all I would add to that is I think he'll grow. I think he's a good choice as captain, and I think he'll grow into be a very good captain of that club. He's a top class player. Yeah, he hasn't had a good season as he has in the past. We've shown, I think certainly the last month, he had a really bad patch where there was even talk of him being dropped. But I think since that point, he's been okay. He's had a better end to the season, I think. So I think stick with Stephen Canelio. He's a very good talent.
Thank you very much. This one's a bit of a one to test you guys' imagination. Sam Reid again, not the Sydney player, from Treby. Hey, guys, you jump into a portal, you're taken to an alternate Earth where there's the VFL has not become the AFL, so there's separate leagues. What does the sport of footy look like on the Earth in present day?
So there is an AFL.
No, there's a VFL.
A sandful. I think if that was the case, then there would be a few VFL clubs that wouldn't exist, probably my own, Hawthorn. The fact is the advent of the national comp saved a few Victorian clubs, so... I think if that was the case, yeah, I think it wouldn't be the same competition in Victoria.
What I would say, there'd be a lot of kids playing basketball, soccer, and rugby.
Yep.
Because what the AFL has changed is that players can now be fully professional, they can make really good money, they can set themselves up for life, and all of those things make footy a really good career choice for somebody who has great athletic talent. people with great athletic talent will find a way to express that talent. And so if they couldn't make the money playing footy, they would have found other sports to play.
You see, before the advent of the national comp, you would have your occasional basketball background, athletic background, but they weren't common. You were more standard football background, but now just flourishing with those types. More athletes than footballers in many cases. So very good point, Duff.
That's what the category B stands for, right?
That's right.
Basketball.
That does, yes.
Yes. Poaching our bloody
time. Very good, Josh.
All right, now moving to cool up. Guys, sorry to bring it up again to
cool up.
I understand this is a very touchy subject. What about KPIs for this grand final? There's so much talk from the AFL about potentially the advantage of having a grand final as a frontier into the Queensland again for the game. Mm. What sort of KPIs can we actually look to see the impact of this on the state? I mean, we've seen, and then he goes into this, Michael Voss, I believe, wasn't drafted. He was recruited locally to play in 1992. Nick Riewoldt went number one in 2000. Harris Andrews was 61 in 2014. These are all players, and then there are plenty of players I consider blue chip recruits. Tony Cochran, chairman of the Gold Coast Suns, is always championing the growth of AFL in the Gold Coast and Sunshine Zones by listing the participation of numbers in Aussie and juniors since the Suns franchise in Queensland. If first-round draft picks taken in Queensland is a good indicator of the substantial growth, does the question need to be asked whether or not the Queensland under-18 team should be lifted to Division 1 and should we be tracking the number of Queensland players drafted?
They've got a lot of work to do in Queensland. So the membership tallies that came out this week, obviously West Coast, well done, crashed through the 100,000 barrier.
Fair, great.
Now the biggest club membership-wise in the AFL, I think they've always been the biggest club. Mm. They're certainly the richest club.
Well, if you look at the waiting list, they've always been the biggest club, yeah.
By a considerable margin, I think. Fremantle, of course, stayed above 50,000, which in this season, no mean feat. They're in the top half of the competition, which is good for them. I'd like to see them climb a couple of rungs higher, maybe get in the top eight, perhaps, make the top eight of the membership figures and attendance figures and those sorts of things. The two bottom clubs in those figures were the two Queensland clubs. And Gold Coast tailed off very badly at the bottom.
Even behind GWS.
Behind GWS. So GWS has 30,000 members.
Amazing. That is amazing.
Because they also have the Canberra base as well as the Sydney, Western Sydney base. Yeah, they've got a lot of work to do in Queensland. And they'll be looking for participation.
But it won't be, look, this grand final, I don't think there'll be too many KPIs from the grand final as an event. I think the event will be what it is. I think that's more of a sugar hit. I think what happens after that with the AFL, you know, putting goalposts in grounds, et cetera, et cetera.
Participation for me, over the next 5 years, participation rates in Queensland. One of the stories of footy quarters in the last 3 or 4 years has been the explosion in women's football in Queensland. So it's one of the, it's probably almost the fastest growing area of the game anywhere in Australia, women's football in Queensland. And it's why the two Queensland teams tend to be reasonably competitive in the AFLW. So this is very encouraging for the AFL, but they've got to find ways to tweak that into memberships at Gold Coast, memberships at Brisbane, and try and find ways where those clubs come closer to being standalone clubs. Because 2 years ago, the AFL put $30 million into the Gold Coast Suns. Now, by way of comparison, most other clubs, so the two WA clubs got $11 million as part of their distribution. The Gold Coast Suns got $19 million more than that. $19 million. The most subsidised Melbourne club that year was St Kilda. They got $20 million. So that just tells you where they're at. There's a lot of work to be done there.
And early 2000s, three premierships in a row to Brisbane, and 10 years later they were, you know, on their knees. So That probably tells you where the work that needs to be done, and it's not all on the field at an AFL level.
Just one very last quick one from guy from Mount Claremont, Josh Garlop. What do you guys think about
Mount Claremont?
Yeah, well, it's
very nice.
A share house, mate.
Right for some.
Don't get too excited. What do you guys think about the pay of Gill compared to the top players in the AFL compared to other leagues? I mean, you look at the NBA, it's five to 10 million for Adam Silver. Top players get 40. NFL.
We've had this conversation before.
Look, there's always outrage when they find out how much the CEO of the AFL gets.
We don't know. That's the problem.
Oh, okay.
We don't know how much he gets.
But let's say
he certainly earns more than the top paid player.
Pre-COVID, Gillen was on $1.7 million, which puts him above
any player,
the highest paid player.
Per season, yes.
The AFL is a basically half-billion-dollar industry now. Well, it's probably – actually, it's more than that. It's probably a $1 billion-a-year industry. So shouldn't the CEO of a $1 billion industry get $1 million salary or $2 million salary?
Yes. I just want to know what it is.
Yeah.
I think we should – we have the right to know what it is.
That would be – that would be market rate, wouldn't it? Well, it might be below market rate.
I think it would probably be – I think it would be below market rate.
The shift in the other leagues has been, I mean, without the players, you don't have the league, whereas the CEO potentially is replaceable. So, therefore, that was part of their player agreement. I don't know. It's really how long's a piece of string for this conversation. But
very good question, Josh, from Mount Claremont.
Yeah, well done, Josh.
Yeah,
we look forward to hearing more from you, Josh. Please continue to contribute to our show.
All right. Cheers, guys. I emailed myself that one. So that was a good
one. Thank you very much for joining us today. We'll be back on Tuesday to run the ruler over the results. Quarters, you and I are one tip away from being back on the first page in the panel. That's my goal this year. That's my KPI.
Come on, Eagles.
We're both on 88, and Mitch Woodcock, who's at the bottom of the page, and Craig O'Donoghue at the bottom of the page, they're on 89. So giddy up.
Come on, let's go.
Come on, let's go. Let's get to it. All right. Thanks for joining us today. We'll be back on Tuesday.
We will.
Whoa, before you go, producer Josh here. Remember, if you are a fan of the podcast, send us your thoughts. Do you have some big AFL ideas that just keep getting lost on your mates? Or has ISO allowed you to crack a big footy problem? Well, send us the topic you want two of Australia's most experienced and respected footy journalists to discuss. Send us your name, location, and thoughts to me at josh.garlep, that's G-A-R-L-E-P-P, at wanews.com.au. Just make sure you chuck mailbag in the subject. Thanks for listening.
This has been the Duff and Quarters podcast on the game.
You know who.